morning. You've tuned into the Community Character Hour, and here we go. We're going to start things off with a fun fact from Will's calendar with Hannah Combs. Go ahead, take it away.
Our fun fact for today comes from the February 1st, 1901 issue of the Kootenai County Republican. I will note this was one of only two items of news in the paper about Sandpoint for the entire month of February. The incorporating of the city, the village of Sandpoint, did not make the cut as far as I can tell, but this one did. So I'm just going to read what was going on. The Woodsmen's, that was a fraternal organization back then, St. Valentine's Day ball on February 14th will be a sheet and pillowcase affair. The Cusick Orchestra of Spokane has been engaged to furnish the music. There was also an oyster supper, and tickets were $2.
A sheet and pillowcase affair. That's kind of suggestive.
Yeah, please elaborate.
Yeah, okay, so as far as I can tell, this started as an initiation ritual in girls' boarding schools. So the new girls to the school would show up to a dance with literally like a sheet or a pillowcase over their head so no one could see who they were. And then throughout the night, it was kind of a game. The older girls would dance with them and then like ask them questions about themselves to get to know them. And it was like a way of welcoming them in. And then I guess at some point they would take the sheets off their heads and everyone would be like, oh, it's Amy, or yay, welcome. But in this context, I can only imagine that it was similar, but it was like a dance with young men and young women. And the girls would wear, again, like sheets or pillowcases on their heads. They would have a dance card. So this was an old custom where you would literally have like a little book that hung from your wrist, and gentlemen could request a dance from you. They could say like, oh, I would love to dance the fourth waltz with you. And then they would write their name in your little book. And then at the appropriate time, they would come up to you and be like, oh, I'm claiming my dance. And they would take you out and dance with you. So
what would happen if you didn't want to dance with the guy though?
I think you could just like, I don't know, maybe like shove your dance card up your sleeve or something. So they're like, oh, I'm not dancing
tonight. I lost my book.
Yeah. Oops. Not available. Yeah. So I guess it would have been like that, but with sheets over your head.
Well, maybe hence the sheets because of that situation.
Yeah. So you're already in a big dress of some sort, and then you just have a sheet over your head too. I feel like it would kind of make the dancing a little bit difficult, but you know, and then at some point everyone's identity would be revealed, and then maybe you're like, oh, this person that I fell in love with through great conversation while we were waltzing, I now can see their beauty before me, or something like that.
Okay.
Well, and I've seen those Woodsman photos, that organization, and the sheets make sense.
Oh, just kidding.
But you know what this reminds me of? I mean, no, there is nothing new in today's world, right?
That's true.
The Love is Blind show.
Yes. I admit I've seen that before.
I have not seen that one. But so this is, you would meet somebody and go out with them, but you'd never get to see who they are. See their face.
Pop culture moment right
yeah.
now.
Okay. Yeah, we're so modern. We know what a current TV program is.
Okay. Well, and it, yeah, apparently not that modern at all. So was this a common thing? It must have been. I mean, it's
casually mentioned.
It's
like
not
that.
Explained at all.
A sheet no and context. Yeah.
Okay. And up from Spokane comes the Cusick Orchestra.
Yeah. And there were oysters. Like, that where did those amazing. Come from? This seems like a pretty big deal.
It does. One hopes that they were kept on ice as they came in from the Pacific. But okay. You are listening to the Community Character Hour. This is 88.5 KRFY. My name is Jack Peterson. I'm here with Hannah Combs. She's the director of the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum. And Heather Upton, whose title I always mix up, but I'm going to try for the Arts and Historic Preservation Officer for the City of Sandpoint.
Bing, bing, bing.
Close enough? Okay. And this is a show about the history and culture and I don't know, everything else about our area, but through a historical lens, hence the hosts. And this show, I hold in my hand. I went down to the KRFY archives and pulled out the complete works of William Shakespeare. This is an abridged copy, but I have from Romeo and Juliet, Act 2, Scene 2. I think this is where Juliet is up on the balcony. She says something along the lines of, "What's Montague? It's nor hand, nor foot, nor arm, nor face, nor any part belonging to a man. Oh, be some other name. What's in a name? That which we call a rose by any other name would smell as sweet." So on and so forth. Would Sandpoint not be Sandpoint were it called Lucerne? Shakespeare, folks. You are
that was deep.
Yes, we're talking about, or at least we're jumping off with talking about the topic of the name Sandpoint and where this name came from. Why did we settle on Sandpoint? Why is it spelled the way it is? One word, one capital S, no E at the end. So on and so forth. Yeah.
I have a clever tie-in. Okay. So if you think back to those girls with the sheets on their heads and say you have this fabulous conversation, say they are even revealed when the sheets come off, but if you don't catch the fair lady's name, she could just disappear into the night and you would never be able to find her again, except that you live in a small town, so you probably know everyone. But in theory,
That's a good. Yeah, that's a great point. So it is important to, extremely important to catch somebody's name. Mm-hmm. It can be very difficult to find that person again if you don't know their name.
The power of a name,
or to find that place. Mm-hmm. If you don't know its name either.
Okay.
Wow, what a tie-in.
People have names, places have names, some buildings have names, not all, some just have addresses. Some animals have names, not all. Well, as far as we know.
We definitely spent quite a bit of time, in fact, we couldn't get off of the street names last time, which was a fascinating subject, so we felt like this was a very exciting time. And people always ask me about the name, too. Do they ask you, Hannah?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of a weird name that we
is.
Have.
I mean, my guess is that it's named, that we get the name Sandpoint because of City Beach, naturally occurring sand on a point of land.
Ooh.
Right?
And I learned recently, I saw like a very early map of Sandpoint. And so what we think of as City Beach today is not the extent of what was here way back when Sandpoint got its name. So there was actually, you know, like from, so there was City Beach, and then the area that is now the Long Bridge, like that part of land that goes out into the water.
Yeah.
Before the bridge actually begins, that extended way out into the water. And so way back then, you could really walk on the sand like halfway into what we think of now as that like bridge point between Lake Pondere and the Pondere River. So the sand really went way, 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 way out as a point at that point.
So that is the actual point.
That's interesting.
Yeah. On the causeway is, I think, the that would be the technical term for that, rather than a bridge. If it's, you know, it's over a body of water, but it's not actually over it if there's, if there's land underneath it. Whatever. That's what a causeway is.
That's what you're here for, Jack. Technical guidance.
Okay. So the causeway part of the Long Bridge is the point. Interesting. So this when did this place that exists now start being called Sandpoint, as far as we're aware? Anyone?
So that would be directly tied into the railroad.
As so much is.
Indeed. Are we ready to jump into that?
I'm excited to.
Okay.
Perfect. History, here we come.
Yeah. So at the time when the railroads came through. So this would have been 1882 when the Northern Pacific came through the area we now know as Sandpoint. So generally around the country at that time, hauling tons of freight in a single train load was possible through the use of powerful steam engines, which are a different type of train than we have today. They were an efficient method of transportation, but they could sometimes be foiled by a lack of friction between the steel wheels and the track. So there was this like really gruesome example I read once about this plague of locusts that hit in the plains states. And there were just like billions and billions of locusts, so many that they covered the tracks and all of the land around it. And so if a train went over, the oils from the locusts getting crushed just greased the tracks, which made it really dangerous for the train to be able to stay on there. So why this is important is in order to the far more common example of this is if a train, especially in the mountain states here, was trying to get started, especially going uphill or climbing a big hill in general. They were so heavy that they would need friction on the the rail to get that traction. And so they had these really intricate devices where they could hold basically like a big bucket of sand up on top of the engine, and then it would like filter through these little tubes down to right in front of the wheels, and it would just like pour these little trails of sand out onto the track ahead of the train, which would give it the traction it needed.
Well, and we still do that today with our roads.
Yeah.
Oddly enough.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Quite brilliant. So speaking of gross things, there was also something else that they were letting out on the track.
Ooh, tell us.
Do you remember what that was? So they would release the waste from the toilets on the tracks. Is it too early for that?
That probably didn't help with the friction issues.
So yeah, maybe the sand can help with that. But you weren't allowed to do it while you were at the station, FYI. So that's good.
Okay. Yeah, I wonder where are you allowed
designated flags on the side.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You can never unsee that one now.
Yeah, so not unlike... Yeah, when you're on an airplane today, they will let you get up and use the bathroom at some point.
Yeah, that's true. I never thought about that.
Yeah, probably so that they don't dump it right there at the airport.
Yeah,
I don't think that's really the reason why, but...
new history.
What, you guys have a caboose outside the... with a toilet in
yes,
it. Okay.
It does have a toilet.
Does it just... Mm-hmm. Open up then? So like you just lift the lid and it's just like moving ground underneath.
Well, yeah, that's where I got that fun fact.
Awesome.
Well, in Will Valentine, who is the Will's calendar.
Okay. Yes, the right. Will.
So
yes.
The one and only Will. Yeah, he was the one that brought that amazing history moment to life. So thank you, Will.
Thank you,
Through storytelling. Through storytelling. Not, yes.
So, but it, I mean, even if it's like 20 below and you're going pretty fast down the tracks.
That's where you got to go.
You got to go. You got to go. Yeah. Okay. Just so, opened up.
So all that to say, sand was important to the railroad. So when they built the railroad through this area, because it was the easiest, the path of least resistance, I'm sure the railroad engineers were looking ahead and they were like, ooh, that's a lot of sand. We like that. We could maybe stock up on sand here. And so I think for that group of people, so, you know, as far as people coming into the area, we have the Native communities, and then we have David Thompson coming through as an explorer and trapper, and then we have some surveyors coming in to kind of set up boundaries, and then we have a few, like, very early settlers who were here before the trains. And then the train people come in. So they are one of the first groups of people into the area and one of the first groups of people working within a system where they have to be able to communicate things about their location further abroad. So, you know, if they're talking to the main office back in St. Paul, Minnesota, they're going to have to be able to say, when they're giving their progress report, oh, we made it within, you know, 3 miles of where.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have to be able to tell where they're at in order to communicate with the rest of their team, which might never have been to the area, which necessitates having a name for the place.
Mm, that makes sense. And but Sandpoint wasn't like the very original name, right, for what we know today.
No. Well, there's this whole, oh my gosh, there's a whole thing. So when you talk about powerful groups in the area, this to me illustrates a really good one. Because I think of the railroads as being like the aristocracy of America mm-hmm. at that time. They had mm-hmm. so much power. They were like pulling monopolies on all kinds of things. So the railroads had a lot of power, but so did government entities. And one of them in a rural area, one of the most powerful of those would be the post office.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was this little back and forth between the railroads and the post office, this kind of original scuffle of what was the name of this area going to be. And I think we've got some good quotes from the papers yes. about that.
So the post office would have been in favor of a totally different name or something that, or a slightly different name, at least not calling it Sandpoint.
Yes. Yeah. So we had the name Sandpoint, which really came from the railroads mm-hmm. because they were pretty much just operating on the east side mm-hmm. of Sand Creek. That's where the railroad track was. That's where they were harvesting sand to use on the railroad. And so they were the ones who really started calling it, in two words, Sand Point.
Uh-huh.
It was their precious point of sand that they mm-hmm. could harvest at will.
Yeah.
The early community that lived here was really for a more refined name,
uh-huh.
which was Ponderé, like the lake today.
Spelled in the way the lake is spelled, not the way the town is spelled?
Yeah, good point.
Okay. Well, there are like a million different spellings. Actually, uh-huh. the earliest one I saw in the paper was it would have been spelled like pen,
uh-huh.
like P-E-N, and then D apostrophe ore.
Okay.
So it would read as Ponderé, mm-hmm. if you're French, I guess. mm-hmm. But...
Well, and that would make sense considering the French explorers that were up here.
Absolutely. And then at some point, the D migrated to the west to uh-huh. form Ponderé as we spell it today.
Uh-huh.
I'm assuming.
That really grounds it.
And that's... So I don't speak French either, but I mean, doesn't it mean earring or something like that? Ponderé? Oh, boy.
Hanging from the ear.
Yeah.
Hanging from the ear.
Yeah. Okay. In reference to the shell earrings that the Kalispell tribe mm-hmm. wore.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's where the lake gets its name is from the people mm-hmm. who were named.
The observation of the native.
Yes.
From the trappers.
So named by the French anyway. So called by the French. Mm-hmm. Okay. Carry on. Proceed. For those who didn't know that little tidbit.
Well, and what I love, there's a lot of history that's known and everyone talks about. But to me, this is something I don't think anybody really knows. So you're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Ponderé.
What and about what time are we talking about here? Like what years is this debate going on?
So this is like immediately from when the railroads come into town until about a decade later. So this debate, this first of many debates,
mm-hmm.
was happening from 1882. That's the year the NP came through town, up to 1893. At that time, the post office called the town Ponderé with that spelling, and the railroad was calling it Sand Point. In two words. Okay, we have to introduce another player here who I know we mentioned in the last episode. The force of nature in the early days. Ms. L.M.A. Harmon. Mm-hmm. I just love how her name gets inserted in every single newspaper article.
That's incredible. Mm-hmm.
Which I think really speaks to how opinionated she was. It says, the post office name... from 1882 to 1893 was Ponderé and was the name preferred by Ella Farman.
Okay.
But on December 13th, 1893, it was renamed Sand Point, much to the chagrin of the Farmans and others. I love how, of everything that's mentioned about this name transfer, the fact that she didn't like it was what made the paper.
Yes.
The queen. Uh-huh. We'll just call her Mother Farman.
Uh-huh.
I love that.
Oh, gosh.
Go ahead. Go on. Looks like you're going to read. Is there further?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Then there's just some tussling about whether, you know, it should be two words, Sand Point, or mm-hmm. whether it should be one word. Let's see. It says, oh my gosh. It just bounces back and forth so much. So when L.D. Farman, that's Ella's husband, platted the original town, which we talked about last time, in 1898, he had mentioned it as Sand Point in one word. Mm. So who knows what kind of domestic strife that
struck up.
I love this. In January of 1907, so a decade after all of this happened, it was large enough and became a city, quote, of the second class.
Okay. Uh-huh. Who wore sheets on their heads.
Yes. 1907, you said? That's yes. When it was officially a second class city, according to the paper.
So we became a city a little earlier than that, but I guess it took us a while to become a second class city.
Yes, to gain that class status. Okay.
Interesting.
Okay, so those are the two... those are the two debates, or those are the two names, at least in contest at that point.
Earliest
one is Pondere, which names. the lake was already named called Pondere going back. I'm guessing.
And how
probably.
How does it become official? Like, does it just somehow hit a map, and then people just kind of go from there? Or like when we're talking back when the fur traders, the French explorers, were here.
I think at that point it would just be whatever name they put on the map would be, you know, it's kind of like if you're the first person who draws it, you can put whatever name you want. And that's how that's the only option people will have if they're looking at it from afar.
Right. I know. Yeah. Like Lewis and Clark and their party named a lot of things in this area. Just they're the first ones through.
Probably after themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's plenty of that. Uh-huh.
But yeah, about how that would happen. I think originally it's just whoever calls it that. And then I also wonder if this is kind of like seeing a shift of power, which is kind of interesting, because in those very early days, you do have families like the Farmans who have a big voice in how the community is run. And then I think it's interesting because they were very proactive about kind of formalizing how the town, you know, that the town was incorporated, that we had a sheriff, that we had a judge, and like kind of setting up these systems of civilization, so to speak. But also seeing how by setting up those systems, it was kind of taking that power away from themselves in a sense. Like they still had a say, but now they had to share it. And I'm really curious about how that dynamic played out over time.
I know. I want to hear back to you the couple's strife.
Yeah. Those are the kind of things that don't make it in the paper. Well, sometimes you never know. If you were sick, it would make it into the paper. I don't think they often reported on familial disagreements. But yeah, in terms of how names would be decided, once that structure of the village was formalized, then there had to be a process behind it. So it looks like in the early days when they were again, let's see, in 1905, kind of tussling over whether the name should be changed. At this point, they couldn't just change it. They would have to, in order to change the name, they would have to circulate a petition among the citizens, calling upon the Board of County Commissioners to call a special election.
Well, and I love how, and this is amazing because it's not very different from how we operate today at the city, but in that article, they were talking about the village attorney, Taylor. Ooh. And, you know, a city relies heavily on their legal services. And absolutely. So apparently they had to go to him to figure out how this process works.
Good point. Yes.
And many a times in a council meeting, we all look to our attorneys and then they interject and then we can move forward.
They keep us on the straight and narrow.
Thank goodness.
So you would have to have an election and the petition itself would have to be signed by 2/3 of the population to even say, we're interested in changing the name and we want it to be on the ballot.
Huh.
But then when you get to the idea of, okay, but what should those options be for what the proposed name change is, that's when it gets even dicier.
Well, and apparently this was happening for quite a while, this back and forth. And there were, you know, those opponents to changing the town's name, and they were expressing the views of how some people were feeling like Sandpoint at that time was now widely known in that it would be difficult to change the name. But then there were others like back that felt like there's still opportunity to really put that brand out there and think about like the most amazing name and thinking about the people on the East Coast that don't know it. And apparently abroad, Sandpoint was known as the home of the cedar, which I thought was really interesting. And my husband was just talking yesterday about how magnificent cedarwood is, going on about the history of the cedar and that it's a magical tree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I had no idea until reading this, like, how conscious the people then were of their kind of position in the world.
Yeah.
I think we tend to assume like, oh, it's just a bunch of people homesteading and just living off the land and being oblivious to what's going on in the rest of the world, or like feeling like the rest of the world is oblivious to them. But this does not indicate that that is the case.
Yeah, definitely. And back to you were originally talking, I was trying to think about this. What was the plan that you were talking about that was a national movement? Was it a beautiful town or?
Yeah. Yes.
City Beautiful.
Like City Beautiful.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder if it was a huge movement across America as these towns were getting established, or was it just very top of mind for this community? It's amazing to think, too, that a lot of people traveling, according to the archives at the museum, people would just pass by Sandpoint and they were headed to Hope and kind of that Clark Fork area. Is that right?
Yeah. So Hope was, if you're talking about visitors, especially in a tourist sense of like just coming to enjoy the scenery, hunting, those kind of things, Hope at that time was a much bigger draw. Sandpoint was, in those early days, especially the late 1800s, a pretty industrial area. So we had the railroad. Everything was built up around that. Everything, in some sense, served that for a while. Mm-hmm. But Hope, you know, was settled a little bit earlier. And I think they also caught on to the tourism possibilities a little bit earlier. And if you've driven out to Hope along the water there, it is stunning.
So breathtaking.
Like some of the most beautiful views of the lake imaginable. And they really got into what I think of as like the spa market.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I mean, people still go there even now. It's Ponderosa Horse, but we were there yesterday with our spa moment and the kids. But so that understanding that makes all of the debate about the name and the importance and putting Sandpoint on the map and how do we get people here, I feel like it really helps ground it. And so I was reading some other articles that there was a strong opinion about calling this area Corbin City.
Ooh, yeah. So
I thought that was really a wild one.
The like commercial cunning of the people who lived here. I love it so much. They came up with all of these schemes and like really elaborate ones. So Corbin was the name of the guy who owned the Spokane International Railroad Company. So this was the most local railroad company because it was based out of Spokane. And so I think at this point we would have already had the Northern Pacific line through town and the Great Northern. So we already had two railroads coming through Sandpoint. That wasn't enough for the people. They wanted a third. And so they came up with this scheme to rename Sandpoint Corbin City after this guy. I guess in the hopes that it would flatter him enough, the goal being that they wanted him to set up his shops here. And railroad shops would be like these huge buildings where you could service, you could do maintenance on engines and train cars and things. So it's a big investment in the community in terms of building equipment. It would bring people into the community who were working there, making good money, who could then be buying products from town. So it's I don't remember if this happened before or after the Humbird Mill was already established. Either way, same kind of thing. Once you have a big company in town like that, there's just economic benefits that flow forward.
So fascinating.
And it wasn't his name to name it after himself. It was the people here who wanted to name it after him to try and lure him in.
Exactly.
I mean, the fact that they'd practically just give away their city name to have more, I think is really interesting. And so the other names that I was reading that floated around were Ponderé, as we know it today, the city of Ponderé, Lake City, and Grand Pointe. And apparently, and I was like, oh my goodness, that's crazy. So John Law, and we talked about him in the last episode. So he platted
South Sandpoint
that we know today, and where we get the names Ruth and Ella. And unfortunately not Gertrude.
Gertrude,
or maybe fortunately, I don't know. But so in 1910, it says the citizens of Sandpoint are considering the proprietary of name change. The names proposed, and then they go into Ponderé Lake City, Grand Pointe. John Law, an early settler and property owner who has a law addition, liked Grand Pointe, one consideration being the name is similar to Sand Point and would not be like starting a new town's name in advertising. And Law says it is fully recognized that the name starting a new town's name in advertising, that Sand Point gives a, sorry, a little early this morning. It is fully recognized that the name Sandpoint gives a hurtful impression, and it was with this idea in mind and realizing that an effort would sooner or later be made to change the name that the writer suggested, the name Grand Pointe, which would be the slightest change and the most suggestive of Sandpoint of any word obtainable, saving the city the most possible of advertising already had. The word Grand Pointe has a more vigorous and stronger sound than any other name yet suggested. I thought that was really interesting. All geographical names incorporating the word point are understood to be on bodies of water. The word, this is where you would get really excited, Jack. The word indicating a peninsula.
So, okay. And think of the savings that you'd have on the signage if you only have to add two letters.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. And like, this was another one that just, I loved it so much because you have to think pre-computers, like over 100 years ago, everything was handmade. So you were going to have to, you couldn't just order a new sign. You were going to have to go out and have somebody go like scratch out the S and paint a new G and R onto it. But that's a lot less time than having to scrap the whole sign and put an entirely new sign up. And I'm just imagining like teams of people sitting in like a classroom, you know, like
the white
scribbling, like using whatever the early form of whiteout was. There wasn't one on all of their postcards to just like change the name, so they didn't waste the paper.
And there, it was brought up too. I mean, so much thought was going into this. It was pretty incredible that another reason why Grand Point was favorable, particularly by law. So again, you have these really strong figureheads that are trying to sway everybody to what, you know, they liked. But that it was so distinct. There wasn't another town during that time in the U.S. that was named Grand Point, which makes me think that were there other sand points?
There's only one now, but it's in Alaska. So I'm guessing at that point it probably wasn't around yet, or probably wasn't called Sand Point back then.
Probably not. I believe there's a neighborhood in Seattle called Sand Point, or a micro neighborhood or something like that. This is just based on getting mistaken internet suggestions when you look for, you know, best something in Sandpoint, and you find yourself driving to Seattle to get there. Oh. Yeah. So let's see. As we did last week, we're moving right through this hour, aren't we? You're listening to the Community Character Hour. I'm Jack Peterson. I'm here with Heather Upton, the Arts and Historic Preservation Officer from the City of Sandpoint, and Hannah Combs, who is the Director of the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum. We're talking about the origins of the name of the town Sandpoint, the city of Sandpoint, where we live today, and where we are broadcasting from here on 88.5 KRFY Panhandle Community Radio. Heather, what do you got?
Well, it continues.
Yes, go on.
There's another one that came up.
More names. Okay.
Well, let's enter another group of personalities, the Sandpoint Commercial Club. And Hannah, will you describe? I'm not familiar with the Sandpoint Commercial Club.
So the Commercial Club would have been similar to, like, I think it would be similar to a Chamber of Commerce, except whereas a Chamber of Commerce, you know, today has like a director and a board, and they kind of guide things for the organization. I think the Commercial Club was really just the most prominent business owners in town. So say there's a group of probably 20 or so of them, and it's a club. So they, you know, meet once a month probably and vote on, or actually a better likening might be like the Sandpoint Shopping District.
That's what immediately came to mind, because it seems very different than like the Civic Club.
Yes.
So I imagine it was like a bunch of gentlemen in there with their fantastic mustaches making all the decisions of the community until Ella May and her cronies came in from the Civic Club. Yeah. Because this was in June of 1910. It says the Sandpoint Commercial Club had proposed another name change to Lake City. And that reminds me of like a basketball team, but it was a meeting about it.
Lakers, is that a sports team?
Yes. Yes. So then after the Lake City was voted thumbs down, there was a gentleman named J. Herbert Anderson, and he was the president of the Panhandle Smelter at Ponderay. And he felt that it would make sense to, he was allowing the city of Sandpoint to adopt the name Ponderay. And then he felt like it was okay because while the smelter was in town, it wasn't incorporated yet. So he said he'd call the smelter area, which we know, you know, Ponderay today as East Ponderay. And then we could have, you know, West Ponderay.
So he offered to gift Sandpoint with his name.
And that was a big area because of the smelter. So it's like the more industry, the more power you had.
And there was a press. Well, I think at that point there would have been the precedent of Hope and East Hope. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe that made sense to people in that way.
So we're still playing around with names. We have, you know, Grand Point is still, you know, in the running. There was a Grand View thrown around. And then a public school superintendent, and who happened to be from Ohio, suggested Lincoln, Hamilton, Columbia, or Mount Vernon.
Which there are only about 400 examples of each of those in the country.
Okay. Right. Yeah. But nobody, I mean, this is how much people don't like the name Sandpoint.
Yeah.
Because it's coarse. And it's, yeah.
There was so much concern about it. And in fact, they were talking about the Commercial Club said that 90% of the people are ready to have the name changed.
Wow.
that he it hurts. So the name hurts the town's fame abroad.
I love. I found this little bit somewhere. It's just snarky. It says Sandpoint might as well have been named Peruna because some of the early drug stores here sold that article, or Saw Log in honor of its timber industry. It says it's a stumbling block that should be speedily removed from the city's progress.
That's amazing.
Okay.
So the name Sandpoint was a great handicap in that people abroad associated the name with sandy, windy, and an unproductive country. Or county. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Wow.
So people amongst the country, like, they would be impressioned to think that that county is has no value.
Yeah.
I love that at one of these commercial club meetings, there's a note that W.F. Whitaker, who was leading the meeting, they'd been tussling with it. And he just stood up and said that he favored a complete change. And it says he asked the president to call on the ladies and leave the men alone. He's like, we've heard enough of the men's ideas. We know the women will have better ones. And then I love, at this point, there's a note of Mrs. Ella Mae Farman again coming in to the meeting, citing her extensive travel of the past few years, and stating that it says that both at home and abroad, she was obliged always on meeting strangers to correct the impression that she lived in a desert or a sandy country.
So it reminds me of our current city council today, where we have a lot of wonderful, passionate community citizens, and we have an issue, and there's public input that's requested and a time for that. And so everyone kind of comes up and passionately explains their why. And but then in the end, you know, it's council's decision currently, you know, so I believe back then that would have possibly been how it was decided.
That's a great question. I mean, I think we do have the bit about there having to be a petition, there having to be an election. So yes, so I think
that's the community outreach moment.
Yeah. So ultimately, it would be governed by a vote from the people through a formal election process. But there's, I mean, I think you would have had to actually put like candidates on the ballot like we do for people. So you'd have to say, okay, we're doing a ballot measure to propose that the name of Sandpoint is changed to, and then there would be the options. So Grand Point, Lake City, Lucerne, maybe a write-in if they did that at the time. And then people would get to vote.
That makes sense.
I think it would work.
Well, yeah, definitely.
Could we still do that today? What do you think? Could we get if you get 2/3 of the city of Sandpoint to sign a petition, can we just change the name to something
else?
I
want to talk to legal.
Okay. Yeah.
can we reprint? How many signs do we have to reprint?
Yeah.
But I definitely that moment, anytime we work on a project or something comes up, we have that large community input process, and there's so many ways that you do that. So this definitely is so many parallels to how we go through processes today. But I did also, I think I would have liked Mr. Whitaker, and he also was historically, wasn't he with Nell Iron and he was like a school superintendent. I'm trying to remember.
That sounds right. I would have to go back and check my notes.
But he kind of stood up. Like, so after reading this, I don't know if you ever do this, but it actually kind of comes up in my mind, and I'm watching these characters. So Mr. Whitaker stands up, and he reminds everybody about the origin of Sandpoint, which I thought was really interesting, and that it being the only point of sand on the lake, and that the steamboat captains in the early days used to get their orders to stop at the sandy point. So he's like, but let's not forget the why, people. Kind of, you know, so he's trying to like bring them back and ground them. I'm like, love your creativity, love your ideas. Let's get the women, and then don't forget the why, the history.
Yeah. Yeah, bringing that history back into it, even when that history was only 40 years old at that time.
We are rapidly approaching our close here. Do we have, at some point the debate was just over. We just said, we're going with it. Yeah.
So,
also you didn't even mention, I mean, you just mentioned Lucerne, but I don't know where did that idea come from? Oh,
that is, you know, I think the fanciful town folk thinking that we could bring more people into the area if we positioned ourselves as a Swiss Alps resort town.
Uh-huh.
So this was kind of the beginning of the like resort town imaging that they were trying to create.
And that happened in the 70s too, when they thought becoming a Western town would be more attractive. Mm-hmm. And we still have, you know, remnants of the facades of that.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, Hannah, didn't it, to wrap it up, didn't it just end up being too much work? And
yeah, and I'm sure the fact that no one could agree on what the name should be changed to held them up from ever actually getting a vote on it.
Yeah, the name. So I think I was reading here, the name of Sandpoint proved to be more difficult than had at first been thought, you know, to change it. So they dropped it. Mm-hmm. And but how amazing, you know, that they went through such a process to think of that, which I think definitely, because there's so many more stories about how do we get people here to Sandpoint that are so amazing. We should continue this topic for next time.
We could talk about tourism for hours.
Oh, mm-hmm. Love it.
Well, that'll be a nice little tease for what comes next. So, I mean, moral of the story is, or what we've learned here is just that basically the railroads, for practicality purposes, named the town Sandpoint, and much as people disliked it at various times in our history, it never changed. We got stuck with it. We got saddled with that name.
And I celebrate it today.
I happen to like it. I never thought there was anything wrong with it.
I'm so thankful.
I heard, before I came here, I'm sure I heard it, and I think it Sandpoint brought to mind like a beach.
Well, right? And where else do you have natural white sand beaches that's not tropical too? So mm-hmm. Like, thank goodness that they're honoring the natural resources.
Yeah. No one's ever asked me if I live in a desert.
I know. Yeah. I was just in Minnesota last weekend or so. And I thought I was going to have to explain to a lot of people like where I live, but everybody I talked to said, "Oh, Sandpoint, I've been through there. It's really nice." Or, "I know somebody there. Oh, I'm so jealous. That's supposed to be beautiful." Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, there was nobody thought that I lived basically anywhere but here. It was interesting.
Swallowed by sand.
Yes, that's right. As I shook the sand out of my shoes. Let's see. We should probably move to wrap up. People have been people who heard our first episode and who have heard about this this wonderful little show that we're starting to put together. It's called the Community Character Hour, and we're talking about the character of our community. And people have wondered, are we going to have any characters from our community on the air? And to that, I would say yes. Mm-hmm. I think we would love to have some to add your stories and your voices.
Well, and this goes back to the Cultural Collective campaign that the Arts, mm-hmm. Culture, and Historic Preservation Commission, the city, the Museums Partnership have put together to make sure that we're actively collecting the community's history and supporting the museum in that effort and making sure that everyone's history is known and archived and preserved forever and therefore put into projects and celebrated. And that's the thing. Like, everyone has a story. And I think, Hannah, do you feel the same way? Like, when you start to talk to someone about Sandpoint and they start sharing, mm-hmm. and you immediately would want to put your tape recorder on, yes. and be like, wait, stop. Like, let's record this.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what's so fun about having this platform. Thank you, KRFY. And also, I think, like, if you have a story, we want to hear it. So, Hannah, how do they go about doing that?
Yes. So this would be through what we call an oral history program. That is where we facilitate these recordings, where we'll set up with an audio recorder and you give us permission to archive your stories in the museum for future generations to hear about your life or the things you remember. And then we sit down and we talk. And, you know, one of us or one of our fabulous volunteers, mm-hmm. asks you questions, and you get to tell stories from your perspective and your words. And those are saved.
So if you have a story you want to share, I believe it would be easiest to contact at the museum.
Yes. You can go to our website, which is BonnerCountyHistory.org. You can also email us at info@BonnerCountyHistory.org or give us a call at 208-263-2344, and we'd be happy to set that up with you.
And if you're super excited about our community's history, but want to be a part of our current history and want to get involved, you like that tie-in, to what's happening at the city, you can go to sandpointidaho.gov. And right now we have commissions and committees are open. And that's an amazing way to get involved and be a part of the planning that's happening right now in the community. So I strongly encourage you to do that. You can go onto that website and watch past videos for all the commissions and committees, planning and zoning, council meetings. There's all of our upcoming events. So it's a great site to get plugged into.
The museum, what's going on over there this time of year?
Yeah, this time of year, we're doing a lot of planning for summer programs. But I've just been delighted by the number of volunteers and community members coming out to share their ideas of what we could be doing out in the community. That's been great. We are putting a huge emphasis this year on the oral history program and the cultural collective campaign. So just getting volunteers trained to do those interviews, to transcribe them so we can read them later. So yeah, we are also, so I'd say we're planning and we're recruiting volunteers both to conduct oral histories. And if you are, if you really enjoy hanging out with awesome kids from the community, we are looking for docents for our school tours. So coming up in April and May, we do a whole bunch of field trips at the museum, and we're looking for volunteers to help guide those field trips and share all the awesome things about local history with our fourth grade students and beyond.
And speaking of amazing volunteers, I just wanted to give a shout out to Will Valentine and Dan Evans, who provided this incredible research to us. And the volunteers at the museum are the most incredible people.
They are. Yeah, the hours that they put into sifting through all of the newspapers so that we can get those funny quotes that we're able to share with you.
Yeah, they're like pieces of gold.
Yeah. I'm Jack Peterson. We're here with Heather Upton and Hannah Combs. Heather is the Arts and Historic Preservation Officer for the City of Sandpoint. Hannah is the Director of the Bonner County Historical Museum. And this has been the Community Character Hour, which airs on the second and fourth Mondays of every month right here on 88.5 KRFY, Panhandle Community Radio. Thanks for joining us. Catch the rebroadcast if you want, or find the show on our website. And we'll be back with more next month. And excited to do it, excited to be here. Thank you guys so much, as always.
Thanks for having us.
Pleasure to be here.
Okay. And now we'll throw in a little music to polish out the hour. Enjoy Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long after that.